ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन प्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भगवद्वैषिणी.
Verse 24, chapter 6.
Sankalpa Prabhavan Kaman. Sankalpa Prabhavan Kaman. Tyaktva Sarvana Sheshataha. Tyaktva Sarvana Sheshataha. Manasai Vindriya Gramam. Manasai Vindriya Gramam. Viniyamya Samantataha. Viniyamya Samantataha. Sankalpa Prabhavan Kaman. Tyaktva Sarvan Asheshataha. Manasa Eva Indriya Gramam. Viniyamya Samantataha. Sankalpa Prabhavan Kaman Tyaktva Sarvan Asheshataha. Tyaktva, in the Kalimbo past participle. Having abandoned, having given up. Kaman Sarvan, all desires. Asheshataha, completely. So, having given up Sarvan Kaman, all desires that are Sankalpa Prabhavan. Sankalpa Prabhavan means all the desires that have their birth, that are born of Sankalpa. Every desire is born of a Sankalpa. So we'll see that in a minute. So having given up all desires that are born of Sankalpa, Asheshataha, without leaving any remainder. Shesha means a remainder, like a little part left over. Asheshataha means no, with nothing left over, with no remainder. Nothing left over. All of it. Giving up all of them. Manasa eva, by the mind alone, indriya gramam, the whole group, grama means group, the whole group of indriyas, sense organs, the organs of action, and the organs of knowledge, the jnanendriyas and the karmendriyas. Viniyamya, having brought those under control, having restrained them, samantataha, having restrained them from all sides. So this, I think in Swamiji's, you have the two verses together.
Mm-hmm.
That's because they should be together. Let's do it. Then let's do the next one. Shanai shanai ruparamet. Buddha dhriti grihitaya. Atmasam stammanakritva. Nakin chidapi chintayet. Shanaihi uparamet bhujya dhriti grahitaya atma samstam manaha kritva na kinchit api chintayet. Then just to go on, having controlled, first of all, having given up all desires born of Sankalpa, all of them completely without any remainder, then Viniyamya, now we're in the second line, okay, we're not into the second verse yet. Viniyamya, then having restrained, having brought back, held in your hands, and under your control, all of the karmendriyas and jnanendriyas, the whole collection of them, the organs of action, the sense organs, having done that by the mind alone, samantataha, having brought them in from all sides, then shanaihi, slowly, gradually, uparamate, one should resolve, buddhya, by the buddhi, one should resolve buddhya by the buddhi, dhriti prahitya, which possesses, which has dhriti. Dhriti means strength. Can mean courage also. Strength, courage, resolve. A buddhi which is strong, right? A buddhi which knows what it's doing. A buddhi which has some strength, some resolve. So by such a buddhi, having slowly, gradually, upanamate, having resolved, by the buddhi what? Atma samstam, atma samstam manaha kritwa, having made the mind abide in the self, atma samstam, sit in the self. Exactly what these things mean we have to unfold. Make the mind sit in the self. Na kinchit api chintyet, not thinking of anything else. Not focusing on something. Not thinking about anything else. Resolving in the self, not seeing anything else. Okay, so we'll see what this means. So going back to the beginning. Every kama, every desire that a person has originates from a sankalpa, right? The sankalpa is a thought which converts a fancy into something that you want. It's a desire. As the sankalpa is the thought, like Swamiji will say in his bhasha, something like this, sometimes when he's unfolding the sankalpa or the origins of a desire, he uses this example. If a woman is going window shopping, right, and she walks by a store that has a beautiful dress in it, she just walks by and she notices this dress. Right? So that's a pretty dress. Walks on. That's a beautiful dress. That's a nice dress. Walks on. And she's walking down the street. She says, "Oh, that's really a nice. That was really a nice dress." And so the next day she goes by that window again and she says, "That really is really a beautiful dress. What a pretty dress." Walks by. But now she's walking by, she starts thinking, "I should have that dress. Actually, I really want that dress. Once that, I should have it. I need that dress. I want that dress. That dress would be good for me." That's the sankalpa. Because it's no longer kind of a fancy, "Oh, what a nice dress," or, "Oh, it would be fun maybe to have that dress. You know, what a pretty dress." That's what we call fancy. Yeah? It's when the sankalpa comes when, "I should have that. I should have that dress. I want that dress." You know? Then that is the seed. That sankalpa then becomes a kama. That becomes a desire. Until that happens, until that sankalpa happens, it's just fancy and it's not, it hasn't taken hold. The sankalpa happens, once the fancy takes hold into, "I should have that." Yeah. I went through the same thing with Tibby. I was just thinking about it, you know. Because in fact, I was walking along that College Avenue and I just went by that, the bird place, and I looked in and there was this one in the front window. There was a Siamese cat, beautiful cat, you know, that everybody would want. And then inside was little Tibby in her cage, you know, and she was kind of very small and a little scrawny and not looking at anybody or anything like that. There was something about her face, you know, that, and I just thought, "Oh, she's so beautiful." And then I left. Still nothing, you know. I thought, "Oh, she's so beautiful," you know, and I didn't like her being in the little cage there. You know? And so then I went back, you know, and I asked, "Could I just, you know, pet her or something?" So the storekeeper came and opened, and Tibby wasn't friendly at all. You know, she just was not relating. You know, and I find that hard to believe, but I was playing with her, So she doesn't care about me. She doesn't have a relationship with me. And so I thought I could just let it go and walk away. And then I watched the sun. I mean, I really was appreciating the sankalpa. I was looking at it kind of Vedantically, honestly, as I was watching this whole thing occur. You know, and I was walked back home, and I was thinking, you know, I miss her. I felt for her, you know. I felt her. But I felt she was my cat. And I went back again. I think I went back three times. Where I felt, and the third time, then she responded to me. And then she was my cat. I saw the power of the sankalpa. It's very powerful. Once it can start with a fancy, there's no power in it. It can come and go. It doesn't matter. You like it. It's charming and all that. But once that sankalpa comes, you know, then it's, I should have that cat. I should have that dress. I should have that whatever. It's a commitment. The mind makes a commitment in some sense toward whatever the object is. That's what we call a sankalpa. And as soon as that happens, that's the kama, then that desire is there.
Is it like a resolve?
Well, they translate it as resolve. Mm-hmm. That's one of the translations, is a resolve. Your mind makes a resolve, like, I should do that. I should have that. But it's a resolve that holds you then. It holds you. That's a kama. So having given up all of those commas completely so that they don't have a hold on you. See what I mean? So having been able to sankalpa prabhavan kaman sarvan tyaktva asheshita, having given up all of those completely. So the thing is, what does it mean to give up resolve? You can, as that fancy comes, you can just dismiss it. Oh, I don't need that, I don't need that. That kind of alam buddhi, I don't need that, I don't need that, I don't need that. Or you can follow it. The resolve can be your prarabdha also. The sankalpa can be the manifestation of your prarabdha. You can still give it up as mithya. Even if you act it out, even if you act the resolve out, you can give it up as mithya, which means whether I have it or not, it's fine. But there has to be a giving up. Otherwise, you become a samsari. Because then, if you say, because listen to just language, I should have that. Another way of saying it, I have to have that. It's more strong. You say, I should have that. That's another way of saying, I have to have that. If you have to have that, then the jivatvam, then you're pulled right into the samsara. Because you have to have that. So how Shankara has dealt with this, how to handle all of this is really, really beautiful. But let's just take it for now. When this comes, I have to have that. Then at that time, your mind is caught by the kama, and it is dragged to whatever the object is. Right? That becomes your focal point. That's what we mean by sankalpa. That's what kama. When you have a kama, then your mind is rotating around that kama also. The kama has at its core the sankalpa. So giving up those sankalpas completely, sankalpa has to be given up. In order to give up the kama, you can't just give up the desire without giving up the sankalpa. What makes the desire a desire is the sankalpa. So that's what has to be given up. So then, having done that, we're talking about meditation here, so. Then, manasa eva indriya gramam viniyamya. Then, he says, now then, having given up the sankalpas, then having pulled the mind back, curbed the mind, restrained all of the indriyas, all of your sense organs and organs of action, by the mind alone, means having pulled them back to yourself completely, right? So now, here you are, you've given up all the sankalpa, you've pulled the mind back to yourself, okay? Then he says, then slowly, slowly, upadamate. One should resolve oneself. It means you're resolving now the mind. He says how to do that in a minute. Resolve the mind. with the buddhi, so you're pulling the mind back, you're pulling all the sense organs, all the organs of action in, then with the buddhi, which itself is firm, which itself has viveka, which itself is strong, so with this buddhi, then having pulled all of these things in, resolving the mind with the buddhi, then atma samstam manak kritwa, then one should make the mind, this is the key here, one should make the mind sit in the self. Atma samstam means place it, one should place the mind, make the mind be placed in the atma. Place the mind, make the mind placed in the atma and not think of anything else. So, not think of anything else. That's this nididhyasana contemplation. So now, what do you actually do? What does it actually look like to do this? Swamiji has a good bhasha on this also. How do I actually pull the mind back and make the mind sit in the self? Here's the problem. First of all, the mind is already sitting in the self. Like the clay, like the pot is sitting in the clay. There is no place where the self is not that the mind has to then go somewhere and sit in it. There's also no place where the mind can go or that the sense organs can go where the self is not. Because in reality, I am the whole. The self is not distant from anything that you perceive. Right? The very swarupa, the very nature of everything you perceive in this creation is only the Atma. All of the being that this, the being, the sat-chit of this creation is the Atma, is yourself. And so there is, in fact, no place where the mind can go that is not yourself. And there's no place where the mind need to go, say, through, there's no place, let's put it like this, there's no place where the mind can go through the sense organs or organs of action, that is not yourself. And there's no place for the mind to go to sit in the self, because there's no place that the mind, that the self is already not there. So in other words, there's nothing at all for the mind to do. There is, though, something for the mind to recognize. And so when the mind, through the sense organs, is being pulled out to an object. Now it's pulled out to this, say you've been caught by a comma, or the mind is just daydreaming, or it's being carried on to thinking about this or thinking about that, or attached to some object or another. Then how do you pull the mind back? Need you pull the sense organs in? Or can the object on which the mind has landed be the object of meditation? Like, say, for instance, my mind gets pulled over to those flowers and I'm interested in the flowers. Can the flowers become the object of meditation? Which means, as widow, how do I see the flowers? Can I see the Atma in the flowers? Can I see the Atma in the cedar chest? Can I see the Atma in any object of desire that I have? Can I see the sat chit? Can I look at the nama rupa, name and form? Can all of a sudden the name and form, which my mind is focused on, is only the name and form? Can I recognize the sat chit in the name and form? Once I do that, my mind is, again, only with myself. So what if I were to practice, no matter what the vritti is, no matter where my mind is being taken, I can leave my mind there, wherever it is, whatever the emotion is, whatever the affect is, whatever the object of desire is, I can leave my mind there, which is where it is, so it's focused there, and in that place where it is, I can see the self. I can see the nama rupa, the name and form, which has my being for its truth. And so that, in fact, is a beautiful nididhyasana, because in doing that, wherever the mind goes, I can notice that my mind has been taken away into this, and that's where my focus is now. And that focus becomes, in a sense, you know, that's where the Ishwara is. That focus, my mind's already focused. And so let my mind hold that and see the satchit, see myself in that. And so wherever the mind is, that becomes the point. All you need, all you really need is the awareness, the strength of the buddhi to be able to catch the mind wherever it is. The pulling back need not involve taking the mind from its position and putting it in another position. Mm-hmm. It's not about that. It's about seeing what is the truth of the self in that particular position where it is. And as you understand that, then what happens is your mind is as it gets lost in the samsara, which means you're lost in the sankalpa. I should have this. Then that's your point of concentration. Should you have this? What is this that I should have? Is this thing that I should have away from me, something other than myself? You can see like that. You bring the whole, what you do is from wherever your mind is landed, in that position at all, and from that very position, you bring in all of your knowledge. And that becomes the Nididhyasana. Because in fact, you are the whole. Right? You are the whole. So it doesn't matter where your mind is. But it matters how you're seeing it. Right? This is a problem of knowledge and ignorance. It's not a problem of doing. It's not a solution. There's no solution to be gained by doing. There's a solution to be gained by understanding. How do you understand? Well, you have to bring your knowledge into that situation. And your buddhi, if it has the strength, the buddhi itself becomes habituated to doing that. And why does it do it? Well, because once the sankalpa is there, once the kama is there that's taken root in your buddhi, once that kama has taken root, there's pain. You know, it's now you have to control things in order for you to be happy. That's the nature of kama. Kama means I need this now in order to be happy. And if that's there, then the world divides up into those people that are going to help you become happy, those people that are taking your happiness away, those people that don't matter. You know, the whole world divides up into what serves your likes, what serves your needs, and what doesn't serve your needs. That's how you start seeing the world. And then also, then your ananda, of course, because of the kama, is projected onto the object, away from you. And so then you have to go and fetch the object so that you can be reunited with your ananda. So this is how the world divides up for you. And so what to do about that? There's nothing to do about it. There's something to know. If you think that you can kind of go like this, you know, and push things away, you can push things away, but you're not getting rid of the problem. You can push things away, but you can't push the sankalpa away, right? Mm-hmm. And so there'll still be inner torment. And so what needs to be done is that you need to bring back the ananda, you know? You bring back the projected ananda back into yourself. And then your mind's already landed on whatever the object is. So appreciating that object, re-own the ananda. And so that process is what's being talked about here. So in fact, you're not thinking of anything else. You're seeing everything as the Atma. Everything is the self. Everything is Ishwara. So the Atma, I am the whole. That's what it amounts to. How do you see I am the whole? Well, every time you either see I am the whole or you don't. When you don't see I am the whole, then at that place, then that's your sadhana. Huh. that's your point of contemplation. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. It's so simple, really. Mm-hmm. Wherever you don't see I am the whole, then that becomes your point of contemplation. We say it in different ways. You know, when you have a problem in the world, whatever the problem is, that problem is your sadhana. That's looking at it just from a standpoint of karma yoga. Wherever the problem is, that's your sadhana. Bhagavan's given it to you. That's your task. You know, for antakarna shuddhi. Wherever it is. And so in that way, all of those things are sacred in a way. Mm. You know, they're sacred because they're your sadhana. And so that's also a very interesting way to hold it, and can be very difficult also, especially when you hate the person or hate the situation. It's very, very, can be very, very tough. But you can look at it with that strong buddhi. That's what they mean by that dhriti. You know, with that, this dhriti grihita. It means a buddhi that has this type of commitment, this type of strength, because sometimes it's really... It's very, very challenging, you know. And so, but that's what it is. It's challenge. It's challenging. So you up the challenge. And I think, you know, being a mumukshu, being a jnani, gaining knowledge, which is something lived. Knowledge is a reality. So gaining that knowledge where your mind has assimilated it, and lives it, that's a challenge. It's a challenge to every place where the mind, you know, is not able to do that. That's a great challenge. It's like, this is now, and sometimes the challenges get harder as you go along. But the easy ones, you know, they drop off first, the easy ones. It's the harder ones where there's kind of more commitment, more need, stronger desire, things that are more very important to you. You know, and if there are desires, and if those things that are very important to you, where there's more commitment, more sankalpa, you know, more kama, more deeply rooted kama, when those things don't drop off, your need for them does not drop off easily. And because there are strong kama, the adversity that the universe throws up your way is going to be huge. It isn't really huge, not in reality. But what makes it huge is the strength of your desire. The strength of your desire, then anything, any little adversity becomes a big adversity because of the strength of your desire. If you didn't have the strong desire, you wouldn't notice, that's what I'm saying. You wouldn't notice the universe doing its job. The universe doing its job of everything in flux, everything changing, everything coming and going, you know. But when the kama is very, very strong or deeply rooted, as the universe is just being the way that it is, you can have all kinds of feelings about it. You know, feelings of rage and betrayal. And again, Shankara says in a previous verse in his Bhasha, he says the feelings of rage and betrayal, and you can even you can even speak rudely. I forget the word he uses. You can even speak rudely to your own guru, which is, you know, that's like that's the ultimate. You can even, you know,
that's speak, the last rudeness.
You can even do that because you can even do that, you know? because of that comma. And so these challenges keep coming and coming and coming until slowly, you know, you're the shanai, slowly, you know, you truly do recognize everything as Ishwar, everything as Bhagavan. I mean, the truth of it is that what any experience of ananda, wholeness, love that you have ever had at any time is only the Atma. It's the relaxed mind reflecting the Atma. That's all. So if anything you should be working on, even as a samsari, you should be working on a relaxed mind. Just relax your mind. That's all you need. You know, you can tell people, don't even care about Vedanta or anything. You said, all you have to do All you have to do is relax your mind. Forget about everything. Relax your body, relax your mind. You'll be so much better off. Because the source of love, the source of the ananda that the mind has ever at any time experienced is only the Atma. It isn't out there. There is no out there, in fact. In terms of the Atma, as terms of the self being the very swarupa of the whole thing, there is no out there. But even if we don't look at it like that, the source of the Atma, the source of the ananda that my mind enjoys is the self, and there's no exceptions. It's just period. That's what it is. The ought that we project that ananda onto the world. We project it onto people, onto things, onto situations, and then of course we desperately need it. We desperately need it because we can't be without the self. You know, it's like I project myself onto the object and then I run after it. And that just simply is not true. The object can be, it can be whatever it is. It can be wonderful. But the object has nothing to do with your wholeness, with your well-being. Well, as true as that is, the mind has lifetimes of telling me otherwise. And the problem is, the illusion is grand. The illusion is grand because everybody in the world is subject to this illusion. And so you're not in it together and alone. If you're in it alone, you'd just be a mad person. But you're not wrong. Equally mad. You know? It's like there's a collective illusion. There's a collective illusion. And since we're all in the illusion, it reinforces us. And that's one thing. The other problem is that this illusion bears fruit. It's even though it's a trick, it bears fruit. And the trick is this, that if I have a strong desire, if I fulfill that desire, I become happy. Well, doesn't that tell me that the fulfillment of the desire gives happiness? If I get my object of desire, I become happy. And if it's a big desire, I become really happy. And if it's a little desire, I become kind of happy. So there's even a relationship between the strength of the desire and the amount of ananda that I experience. The problem is, it's such a grand illusion. But once we analyze that illusion, it becomes just that. It becomes an illusion. Because actually, what happens is that the mind, having the desire, becomes single-pointed. It's a good upasana. It becomes very single-pointed, you know. But it becomes very stressed also because this thing that it's single-pointed upon, you know, has other objects that are attacking it that could stop you from actually achieving it. But nevertheless, your mind is, that sankalpa is there, it is single-pointed. And so when you fulfill that desire, this single-pointed commitment now has been fulfilled and the mind, whoosh, becomes totally fulfilled, totally still, totally quiet. The mind takes on, actually, a meditative state for that moment. Totally relaxed. And so now the ananda bursts forth, right? Because the mind reflects the ananda of the self. And that's the expression that the mind of ananda that the mind enjoys when it's relaxed. And so then you say, I'm so happy because I have this. Where actually the only reason you're happy, the mind is enjoying the happiness, is because for that moment, and it is only for a moment, this is another thing that makes us understand the illusion. For that moment, the mind is totally relaxed. It wants nothing. It's the mind of a jnani, in fact. It's the mind that says, all is well with me. It hasn't had time to have the next desire or the fear that comes up around keeping the desired object. So you get a few seconds there, or a minute or so, you know, of joy. And that minute of joy is related to the object. This is the great illusion. And so once you start understanding this illusion, your mind also develops a pravritti, an inclination toward going toward the self, going bathing in the self that it's not away from, knowing that it's relaxation, all it needs to do is relax and be with me. That's all that it needs. It starts to know that more and more and more. And it starts, and as it knows that, and of course it's experientially valid, it's experientially rewarded, right, by the sense of wholeness and fullness, then as it understands that, it becomes easier and easier to give up the sankalpa. In other words, to let the sankalpa, that I need this, I need that, because of knowledge. She says, no, you don't need that. You can have that. You can have that, but you don't need that to be happy. So then you can, when that sankalpa comes, you don't want it. You don't want it because it's a huge hassle. You know, and it doesn't amount to, as though the sankalpa takes away the ananda from the mind that it already has. It takes away because it creates stress. Right? And so you get in the habit of giving up the sankalpa as mitya. You give up the sankalpa as mitya. Even if you continue to go after the thing, you give it up as mitya. And you recognize your own being. And so then the mind, maintaining its relaxation, can then participate in the creation as Ishvara. You participate in it. You still go after this and you go after that. You have to go after something because you're alive. It's not like you're not, it's not like as a human being you're not going to go toward what you like and away from what you don't like. Just think about it. You become a jnani and now you go toward what you don't like and away from what you like. It's not normal. It's not natural. You'll still go toward what you like and away from what you don't like, all within dharma, because that's just part of life. But your mind isn't seeking to become whole from that. It's enjoying wholeness, the wholeness of yourself. And so now, as a sadhana, as in contemplation, when it says, don't think of anything else, you know, you bring the mind back to yourself. Bring the mind back to yourself. Bring the mind back to yourself means to recognize yourself wherever the mind is. I think Swamiji says it exactly that way. It's a really beautiful way to think of it. Bringing the mind back, bringing the sense organs back to yourself means to recognize yourself wherever the mind happens to be. So that's what it is. That's the Atma Samstam, Samstam Manaha Kritwa, having made the mind sit in the self, not thinking of anything else. That means wherever the mind is, you see the self. Then say, but also you can say, wherever the mind is, you see Ishwara, you see I am the whole. You know, that is my being. You recognize your being there. So that's what's meant by that verse. So let's do the next one. Yato nischarati manaschanchalam astiram tatastato niyam yetad Atman yeva vasham niyet. Yataha nischarati manaha chanchalam astiram tataha niyamya etat Atmani eva vasham niyet. He says, yataha, for whatever reason, because of whatever cause, because of whichever thing, when you do the reduplication like that, you could say, yataha, because of which, yataha, because of whatever, whichever thing, whatever it may be, yataha, nischarati manaha, the mind, the manas, which is chanchalam and astiram. The mind by its nature is chanchalam. It's unstable. It's moving about to and fro just by its nature. It changes. It's always changing. And astiram means it's not stable. It's not rooted in one place. See, if it's stiram, it could be chanchalam and stiram. Rooted in one place, it just wiggles around there, sitting in one place. But no, it doesn't sit in one place, and as it's moving all over the place, right, moving from one place to another, it's changing. Not only is it moving from place to place, going here and going there, while it's doing that, it's also changing. So it's chanchalam, it's always changing within itself, and astiram, it's never at sitting at one place. So that's its nature, that's its very swarupa. So this mind, which is like that, nischarati, bring it back. Nischarati means it's gone out. This mind has gone out. It's left, gone somewhere. Because of whatever reason, this mind, which is by nature continually changing and unstable, because of whatever reason, this mind has gone out. Then, tataha tataha niyamya. Having restrained it, having brought it back, right, from that, from whatever it was that caused it to take it out, etat atmani eva visham niyet. Then, having brought the mind back, then hold that mind in yourself. Just bring that mind to yourself. Let's see what Shankara says there. He has a nice line here. I wanted to read this to you. This is what he says. How to bring this mind back into yourself. How to bring it back to yourself. This is what I've already been talking about. Listen to what he says. He says, how to bring it back. He says like this. Whatever the cause may be, yatatmya nirupanena abasi kritya vairagya bhavanaya cha etat manaha atmani eva vashamniyet. Bring that mind back to yourself by having the abasi kritya, means having seen it as mitya, having recognized it as mitya, by having analyzed it, nirupanena, yatatmyam, for what it is. In other words, when my mind goes out and lands on something, I want that. Then I'm just seeing this object. I become a jiva. I see this object as an object of desire. I go, this is samsara. This is exactly samsara. So now, how do I bring the mind back to myself? He says, by making it mitya, by recognizing it as mitya, by having analyzed the yatatmya, the actuality of it, what it is, what it actually is. And then, so by having made it mitya, and then vairagya bhavanaya, and then with a spirit of vairagya, bringing in my vairagya, having seen the whole thing as mitya, in that way, bring the mind back to myself. Then he says, Shankara says, in this manner, from the strength of this yoga abhyasa, from the strength of doing this yoga, this exercise, of bringing my knowledge to my experience, is what it amounts to. Just amounts to bringing my knowledge to my experience. He says, by this yoga abhyasa, The mind of the yogi, he says, yoginaha atmani eva prashamyati manaha. The mind of the yogi resolves into the self. It's just interesting to actually understand what these words mean. What does it mean to resolve the mind into the self? What does it mean to see everything as Ishvara? How do you do that? Mm-hmm. How do you do it? It's not an action. You know, we can even look at meditation as an action. It's not an action. Meditation is knowledge. Meditation is knowledge of the reality that you've seen at the time of teaching. Otherwise, how do you meditate? What do you think meditation is? You know? There's what we call like jhana samadhi, or a meditation which is just jnanam. Meditation which is just simply jnanam, which is mean meditation that is meant to generate an experience. If you're using meditation to generate an experience, then you are having the experience, but the experience is not knowledge. We have all kinds of experiences. The Ajnani has all kinds of experiences, meditative experiences, supernatural experiences, bliss experiences, samsaric experiences, drug experiences. We have all kinds of experiences. So we can, through an action, through the action of, say, pranayama, or through the action of japa, through all kinds of different actions, we can generate experiences. But in Vedanta, the generation of an experience is not meditation. Meditation is knowledge. It's recognition. It's the recognition of myself, the self that I've recognized at the time of teaching. I've recognized myself. Now I meditate upon what I've recognized. How do I do that? It's bringing that knowledge to my mind. The self is not away from my mind for it to be reached or experienced. The experience is already completely here. The problem is jnanam. And so my mind needs to recognize. When I'm meditating, I'm recognizing myself. I'm owning myself. The self that I've understood through the pramana, that I've understood at the time of teaching. How do I see everything as Ishvara? How do I see this as Ishvara? Through jnanam. It's my knowledge of this as Ishvara that allows me to see it as Ishvara. There's nothing I can do to see it as Ishvara. It already is Ishvara. See what I mean? I'm always seeing this. I'm always walking through it. I'm always experiencing it. There's nothing I can do to experience it anymore. The experience is already totally here. So now I have to, through what I've seen at the time of teaching, not seen as an intellectual catechism. That's not at all what I'm talking about. The Vedanta is a pramana to make you actually recognize something. So nididhyasana is either recognizing the nature of my being, or the nature of my being as the whole, or my nature of my being just as Brahman. I see it. What is that seeing? The seeing is knowledge. That is so. Nididhyasana is knowledge. And knowledge is moksha. There isn't another moksha apart from knowledge. Because the moksha is already here. I already am liberated. There's no liberation to be achieved. And so the fact that my mind doesn't recognize that I'm liberated is a problem of ignorance. And that ignorance needs to be removed. How? It's removed through knowledge. Why do we have to do nididhyasana? Why do we have to continue to bring that knowledge back? Because the mind habitually, for lifetimes, beginningless lifetimes, has been, you know, totally in a total participant, 100% participant in samsara. So everything that it knows, all of the ingrained habit patterns of the mind, are samsara. I am a limited individual, you know, living in this universe, trying to carve out a life for myself to become happy. You know, that's it. What else is that person supposed to know? What else do they know? You have your sense organs and your mind and your body that are a product of this creation meant to participate in it. So this vehicle is the samsari vehicle. All of us, all of our body, mind, sense organs are built to participate in samsara. You know, and then one rare person, as the Viveka Chudambani says, one rare person comes along and says, who am I really? What is really going on? Is there anything else? Is there something here for me to know? Is there anything about me that is stable, that survives change? Is there anything that's beyond the opposites? Is there anything about me that is free from death? Who am I really? Who is God? What is really going on? That's the mumukshu. And that person, through great punya, actually, because the mind has enough shanti, to self-reflect, to ask these kind of questions. Most people don't even ask the question. Their mind is totally engaged in samsara. There's no space to say, wait, who am I really? Is there something to know? That's considered a great punya, you know? Then how to know it? You know, you need a means of knowledge. And the reason is that the knowing does not involve experience, because the experience is already here. That's what's so difficult for people. The experience is already here. So it involves a recognition of what is already here. A seeing differently of what is already here. It requires a viveka. And we use meditative techniques to relax the mind, relax the body, quieten the body, quieten the mind, to give me some space to recognize what is here. It's not like, let's quieten the mind and then astral travel to a different dimension so that I can meet the self. It's quieten the mind because the mind is so used to running around, you know, to have this experience and that experience and this experience, all within samsara, all within duality. It needs to quieten so you can see what is the content, what is the substance of this duality. What is my being? Who am I in the midst? What is the being in the midst of this duality? You have to quieten the mind a little bit. And so we do these techniques, you know, that are very helpful. Like pranayama, japa, relaxing the body. All of these things are so helpful, you know, to quieten the mind, to give me a chance to own my knowledge, that knowledge that I've seen at the time of teaching. That's when you see it. You know, or Swamiji has said sometimes, you know, you either see it at the time of teaching, or you're listening and you're hearing the teaching, and you don't get it, and then you can be taking a shower, and all of a sudden, oh, that's what that was. That's what that meant. Somehow, that pramana has to unite with your experience so that you can see, you know, so that you can recognize. And that really is what nididhyasana is. So when you think nididhyasana, you should think knowledge. How is it different? And if you think with nididhyasana, if you think knowledge, then when I'm looking out at the world, what's knowledge? Ishvara. I see this as Ishvara. I see this as myself. When I'm looking in, just to be with awareness, I see myself as Brahman. I see the wholeness, the fullness, the satchit of myself. So Ishvara Brahman, Ishvara Brahman, Brahman. That's jnanam, though. It's bringing your knowledge to this samsara. Right? And that we can do, he says, yataha, yataha. For whatever reason, the mind is going out. What does he mean by going out? Going out means you're venturing into samsara instead of into Ishvara. Going out means I become a jiva. I'm a jiva who needs this. So when you see whatever's caught the mind, then, you know, in that place at all, at that place itself, see the mitya, that the satya mitya, at that place itself. And then, he says, we'll see next week what he says. What he says is, and for the one who sees that is the uttama sukham. That is the greatest sukha.
that the Pola. Let's do that next week. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha Hari Om.
This friend of mine in Germany, right? So he's like, I know him's like 27 years, right? So it's like, he's like this world traveler. And so I've been just contemplating about how can I actually talk about this with him, you know? And because I recognize that it's just like what you're saying, you know, this driving for the experience or something, you know, it's like, we're just like, we all kind of do it in a way, you know, but this is just a different degrees of recognition of, you know, doing it and what's just happening, you know, that differentiation factor. And so, I was really interested because when I invited him to this, you know, I thought, you know, maybe I can just sit and just listen, and I realized there were all kinds of defenses that came up, you know. Maybe it just fitted into some kind of model of idea of some kind of spiritual gathering, and it just couldn't handle it, right? But I kind of realized this is so true, and even though I haven't integrated this fully what you're saying, I recognize, you know, the substance of it.
Mm-hmm.
But now to communicate, that's my point. Now I'm coming to my point, you know. It's to communicate that to somebody. I mean, you have the skill level that you can communicate that to anybody, I would say, you know, but for me to talk now to somebody else about this without kind of coming across like I got something or something, you know, because that's a projection that happens immediately, like, oh yeah, you think you got something, you know. It's like, how do you talk about this stuff, you know? It's like, I mean, how do you simplify this process that you can actually not come across like somebody who knows something more, but just as coming across as somebody who is just, you know, just simple, you know what I mean? Like, coming from a humble place with this whole process and actually really launching a certain kind of inquiry in that mind, you know, which is kind of caught up a little bit in that samskara, you know, and just keeps churning, and things like the faster it churns, the more it will get there or something, you know. Because I feel the suffering in it, actually, I do feel that. You know, I feel that suffering of that mind as I feel my own suffering of my own mind. And it just becomes a reflection of my own suffering. You know what I mean? And that's where the compassion, it feels like that's where the compassion arises from. Not from that, I know something and you don't, you know, it's like, that's not the point. Do you know what I mean? So it's just like, so I'm just thinking, you know, well, he won't ask me anyway. I mean, he won't ask you. He might not ask me, you know, what did you understand tonight, you know? So, because then you would be already in the inquiry, right? But I know he's searching for that, and I think a lot of people are searching for out of that cage, that mouse wheel or something, you know? But they don't even know that there's something else there, so now, shall I just let him run in this mouse wheel, and is maybe that's the most appropriate kind of respond, or, you know, is there another way to communicate about that? Would you, I just thought maybe there's some glimpse that you can give me about that. Because I thought it was a couple of people close to me, and my family too, my sister, other people, you know, where this comes up, it's like, you know, is it just my own story here? My own inquiry, and I should just leave everybody out of this, or where does it kind of overflow into relationship, you know, and life?
You know, what I really think is that is the simplest and the most, at least I think it's the truth of it, for me anyway, is that your family and friends and contacts, if they know you're studying, they just know, that's all. They know you're studying, they don't do accepting like that.
Mm-hmm.
If they know even just that one little sentence, if they have any interest, they'll ask you.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I never disturb those people at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, at school or wherever I am, I teach some classes and but I never ever talk about Vedanta to anybody. They all know that I that I study Vedanta, that I teach Vedanta.
Mm-hmm.
If they had any interest at all, they would ask.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have any interest, they don't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll seek you out. They'll seek you out.
Mm-hmm.
Even as a friend, they will.
Mm-hmm.
What are you studying? Well, tell me a little bit about that. They'll make some overture.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a whole opening to have really wonderful conversation and everything because
mm-hmm.
they want to know,
mm-hmm.
you know? But if they don't, it just doesn't work,
mm-hmm.
at least in my experience.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of what feels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be, no, I just couldn't believe it. When I first got back from India, I thought everybody would.
You're the missionary.
Here I am! Wonderful knowledge! What a shock that was.
Why do you think it's so infrequent?
It's just infrequent to be a mumuksha.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's not a common thing. It just isn't.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, so you have to get used to that then.
Well, to not expect that of others.
Mm-hmm.
You know? To not expect it. And it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't make a person, I mean, I learned so much from the different people at school and my colleagues and whatnot. They don't need to be a jnani or a mumuksha for me to have them as friends or to learn from them. It doesn't really make any difference at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not asking them to be to that. I don't care. Why should I care? I like it that they're a good person or that they, you know, are nice to me or all that kind of stuff I care about.
But you don't never have that, you know, you come across a person who you really care for and some of that understanding that you have, you feel like could really help them and benefit them and you don't make any attempt to communicate any of that at any time because
I only do if it comes naturally in the course of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I don't.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
But what there's also a lot of different levels of solutions to problems.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and say they're needing a solution. This is true in therapy also, even without Vedanta. The solution is on that is needed is on a particular level, and it may go to a deeper level. But first, this one needs mm-hmm. to be. You can't. You might see three or four levels in, but they're not seeing three or four levels in. If you go here and they're here,
right.
then that doesn't helpful, and it also isn't pulled out of you. What's normally pulled out of you is there's just this and then this and then this. Teaching Vedanta is the same way. You can't say this until you've said this, and you can't say this until you've said this, because it will make no sense whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
You have to say one thing leads to the next. And if you say this before you've said these things, then this is just like a catechism or something. It's just going to be a belief, because you haven't said the things that would make this meaningful.
Even terms like moksha, moksha.
Everywhere
it's translated as freedom, and almost automatically you think of freedom as kind of a physical. I know that I was thinking tonight that moksha is not at all about physical freedom to go here, go there, have this, have that.
Yeah.
But it's actually the freedom that comes from a quiet mind that no longer puts its happiness as the achievement of things or conditions or the affection of
Yeah, people. But the reason the mind can be like that is because it's recognized the nature of the self as free. The self is what's free, you know? And what makes the mind free is to recognize that its self is free. The mind recognizes that its self is free. Like in this verse, the mind by its very nature is this chanchalam astiram. That's its nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Swamiji says in his commentary, would be kind of problematic if the mind wasn't like that, because then we get stuck here. Stuck on a thought. You'd be stuck here. Can't move. The mind has to be, you know, very fluid. It doesn't make any difference at all. The self is, wherever the mind goes, the self is. And that's why, if the buddhi understands that, wherever the mind is, if it's getting itself in trouble, you know, then the buddhi can just see that. That's where the point of contemplation is. That's where the nididhyasana can be, right there. It's the most meaningful place for the nididhyasana to be.
Yeah,
it's right there.
In that meditation, you equated the self as the inner friend, and the inner friend comes at that moment.
You know, what I was trying to do with that meditation is that we always bring in the inner friend, which is so useful, really. But who is the self of the inner friend? So in truth, the inner friend is the Atma. That's the very Swarupa. The very nature of the inner friend is the self. What's nice about the buddhi becomes the inner friend, but the self of the buddhi is the Atma, right? But that buddhi that is pure because it's differentiated itself from the problem, whatever the problem is or the hurt is or the agitation is, that's been differentiated. So now the buddhi that is pure and free, the jnani, it's a jnani, right? Is able to dialogue with the part that is hurt. But that buddhi has its kindness, its love, its stability, its strength is really just the reflection of the Atma. That is the nature of the Atma. It is strong, it is caring without an object, it is loving without an object. It is that. It is whole and complete. These are just words that are lakshanas, pointing to your very nature. And so when the buddhi is the inner friend, is just in a sense an intermediary, in the sense because the buddhi can talk to the different parts that are hurting. But who is the self of the buddhi is the Atma. And that Atma, its very nature is all of that. Wholeness, fullness, strength, you know, solid,
But you know, saying an inner friend, it adds an additional dimension, because you can say that I'm whole or I'm self-effulgent. That's one thing. But inner friend makes it, kind of brings it, more available, more personal, not so...
It really does, and that's why to use the word inner friend and then look at the self of the very being of the inner friend, that's the Atma. It really helps you to get in contact with that very benign nature of yourself. The very benign, kind without being a verb, benign without being a verb, you know, just the very being.
This is sort of like, I think, a confusion that I have in a way, because, and maybe it's like a satyamitya problem or something, but it, or some concept I had, or that's sort of in my way, that like if everything has for its being the Atma, and I guess I used to think, well, if I had self-knowledge or something, then everything would give me joy, because everything... I would see that everything is myself, and everything, so I would always be happy, because and wherever I was, whatever circumstance this body was in, wouldn't make any difference, because it's all the Atma. And so there's something that's not quite exactly right.
Mm-mm. It's not quite right, no.
No.
But what is right, true, is that the Ananda, which is the Atma, mm-hmm. is always there.
Right.
Not the different happy vrittis of the mind.
Yeah.
Because that's like saying, it's what you're saying is that whatever, I only have one type of experience. The mind only has one type of experience,
yeah.
which is a happy right. experience. You know, no matter what, no matter if the body's tired, no matter what, it's just happy
that's
experience.
What I thought. Yeah. Because I said, if everything's the Atma, everything's the self is, you know, the true nature of the self is happiness. So if the true nature of everything is Atma, then everything is always happy.
The problem is this word happiness.
Yeah.
So what they mean by the Ananda of the self, the Swarupa Ananda, is just the very being of Sat, the very being of Chit. What is that? The limitlessness. But what is it? What does it mean? You can't say, well, it's like that, or it's like that. You have to recognize what it is. You know, that's why, you know, when we use words like the beloved, or wholeness, or that sense of all is well with me, these are just trying to point to what is this I, this me, what is its nature? Why do they say, one thing I like to say is, why do they say that the self is Ananda? What do they mean by that? Because when they say Sat, Chit, it's Sat, it's being, which is consciousness, which is Ananda, which is fullness. Why do they say it? What about, because it's not going to be a fullness or a happiness or a joy that comes and goes, because then it can't be Sat. Yeah. So what does the word mean? What is it landing on? You know, like Lakshana. What is it pointing to? And then you can say in contemplation, you can ask questions like, what about, what is beloved? What about me is beloved? Or what about, why would they even ask a question, why Ananda? And then you can see, as you get in touch with your own being, there is nothing more dear to you. There's nothing more whole, there's nothing more full, more strong. The very core of your being, and that's what they mean by Ananda. Even the word love, it's not going to be a love that comes and goes or has gradients. You know, when they say the self is love, what do they mean by love then? So these are words that have to break through duality. That's why they have to be handled.
Didn't even the verse tonight start out with this kind of like that, you know, not just wherever you were, but like, you know, whatever the experience is, that is yourself.
The self is there, yeah. Whatever the experience,
That yeah, is, yourself is there, but wasn't it even a little more than that? It was more like, wasn't a little deeper than that in a way?
Well, whatever experience is there, the truth of that experience is the self.
Right.
I don't know what is deeper than that.
Yeah.
So how do we improve our recognition of this Atman? I mean,
by bringing in your knowledge.
Continually.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to walk around. And
no, but that's a challenge to.
You know when to bring it in, is when your mind is not, when that knowledge isn't just naturally abiding. In other words, when something shakes you up.
Well, that's a lot of the part of the day.
But didn't the first truth of everything is the Atman? Isn't that how
it said? Don't think of anything else.
Uh-huh.
You're thinking of the verse.
I thought it was.
It means that have the it said Atma Sansam Manakritwa, means having make the mind mm-hmm. sit in the Atma,
right.
Don't think of anything else.
Right. And didn't it go on though and say that the self of everything is the Atma? Didn't it say that?
I said that, but the verse didn't say that.
Oh.
But it said the mind, let the mind sit in the self, and then what does that mean? So we want a whole unfoldment on that.
Right.
The word sthiraha, is that the same?
Sthiraha. Astira. Yeah. Sthira is steady. Astira, unsteady.
And sthiraha is the same as sthiram?
That's the neuter nominative singular ending. So manaha is neuter noun. Then chanchalam is adjectival to that neuter noun. That M is the neuter. And astiram, that M is the neuter. Mm. Stira is just the adjective form without the ending on it. Mm. Manas is neuter, right? But chanchalam, astiram, olampale
plan. Does nishta come from stira? From the root?
Yeah. Sta. Similar. Yeah, I think it's the same.
Where is the dictionary?
Tammy!
Yeah, star. Yeah. See, we're star for sure.
You've mentioned it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Star is the doctor, is that the
doctor? To stand.
Star.
You know, you said something, can I ask you something more? You said something like that. Knowledge looking inside is Satchitananda.
Yeah, what I was saying.
Of Brahman, or you said that you associate it with Brahman, then you said looking outward, then you see all as Ishvara. So now, I guess.
Ishvara is just Satya. I can look out and say this is all Brahman, but if I include the Namarupa, the names and forms, the creation, then I see this as manifest knowledge of Brahman, as Ishvara. I see it as Ishvara. Or I can look out and say, you know, this is all just such shit. Like I could say with a pot, this is all clay, it's only clay. I could say this is only Brahman. Or, you know, it depends. Maybe I want to put emphasis on Ishvara, how this entire creation is just one infinite manifestation of knowledge that has for its being Brahman.
So there wasn't any contrasting of what you experience when you go inside and when you look outside. It's still...
Well, when I look in outside, I'm seeing names and forms that have myself for their being. If I look inside, I just see it's just Brahman without any name and form.
I see.
See, say you're doing meditation with your eyes closed, your body relaxed, your eyes closed, your mind becomes quiet and just absorbs into consciousness. Mm-hmm. Then there's only non-dual consciousness there. Now here, with your eyes open, you have the same me, the same consciousness, mm-hmm. with name and form. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you bring in the name and form, you're bringing in mitya. That's Brahman, that's Ishvara.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I see. Okay, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
But when you, to me, I guess maybe this, my mind is very active, because when I think go inside, then, okay, so I'm inside, my eyes are closed and all that. But then that mind
inside just means
still going.
It doesn't have to be. You can withdraw the sense organs, and then you can quieten the mind, you know, with japa or you know, pranayama.
So it's like sort of resolving the mind.
You resolve the mind into, you resolve the pot into the clay.
I see.
Yeah, that's all. If you don't resolve the mind and the mind's chirping away, then that's Ishwara.
Yeah.
What's that again?
Chirp, chirp, chirp.
Oh, okay,
the mind's chirping away.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking away, that's there's Ishwara.
Then there's Ishwara.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, really.
That's
as
nice.
Soon, anytime there's Maya,
yeah.
There's that's Ishwara.
Yeah.
That's kind of nice, yeah, because you can see that, or at least I do, you know, that wandering, flitty mind, bad.
No.
You know, when you're trying to meditate, but it, you know, we'll bring it.
Well, this is a different way to look at it.
Yeah,
it is. It's a better way to look at it.
Well,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
Swamiji said in the one week course, he said, you can't get off of Ishwara's porch.
Well, I actually haven't heard it said quite like that, Kilt, what you just said.
Read Swamiji's commentary. It's really good.
Okay.
Remember this chapter 6 is on meditation.
Yeah.
It's on Nididhyasana. Yeah, it's really goes very deeply into it.
I hope
it's
goes
really
on for another 6 months and takes a long time.
Well, maybe there's some other
when
things.
Well,
we're
talk,
speedy with video
about
running.
Ashtanga yoga, but, you know, meditation is dhyana. How is that word Nididhyasana? Is that also?
That comes from jhana also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how is Nididhyasana? Is it different from jhana, or is it the same thing?
Jhana. You know, Nididhyasana is a term that they use in Vedanta, and it really puts focus on knowledge. But jhana is the overarching term. Even for upasana, for all different types of meditation, is jhanam. So we have jhanam, which has upasana, where the focus is on some form of Ishwara, meditation on the form of Ishwara, and nididhyasana, where it's resolving into Brahman. Even Brahman includes Ishwara as the whole, or the Mahavakya. It's in Nididhyasana, you're resolving into the Mahavakya, where I am Brahman. I can even say I am Brahman, I am Ishwara. It's the same. That's not the upasana. There's a duality there where I am meditating on something else. I'm meditating on the form of Shiva. I'm meditating on the form of something, concentrating on that. You know, on some Ishwara, on Saguna Brahman.
Ishwara and Brahman, because the Brahman would be more like the Nirvikalpa and the
yes,
Ishwara would be...
Yes, but I can appreciate either way, you know.
But what Penny said was very beautiful. I mean, there's only Brahman, only non-dual Brahman, and then when there's... When you're having thoughts while you meditate, then it's Ishwara.
Yeah.
And it never goes away. So even when you're meditating, there's Ishwara, if you're thinking... Or if there's a thought there.
Yeah, and if you're not thinking, Ishwara's in samadhi.
Yeah.
Okay, let's call it a night. Okay.
That's